Our topic this morning is improvised nuclear devices, INDs. And my guest is Dr. Peter Zimmerman, who's a regular guest here on Science and National Security. He's a PhD from Stanford University, former chief scientist at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Welcome, Peter.
Welcome. Thank you for having me again, Randy.
Okay, improvised nuclear devices. You wrote a great article. It was published in Foreign Policy in 2006. In fact, if our listeners would like to go read it, just go to Google search Foreign Policy and Bomb in the Backyard. It was about how a non-state actor, a terrorist organization, could actually build a small nuclear device. So, first of all, tell us, what kind of personnel, how many people do you need? What are the skills they would be looking for?
Well, you start out by saying you certainly need a senior physicist, somebody who's going to play the Oppenheimer role of knowing everything, coordinating everything, making sure that everything is compatible with everything else. You certainly are going to need a couple, three junior physicists, probably pretty young, just past the PhD or a little bit beyond that, maybe assistant professors if you think in the university-level scheme. Beyond that, you need a bunch of engineers, some electrical engineers, some mechanical engineers, and certainly an electronics engineer. And then maybe even the hardest thing to get, you'll need some really good machinists and really good electronics techs and somebody who is used to doing the casting and working of a very tricky metal, even having to do some of the work in vacuum.
Okay, so how many people are we talking about in total here?
Well, Jeffrey Lewis and I, when we wrote the paper, worked it out, and we came to a notion it would be right on the order of 19 or 20. We assumed that we wouldn't hire extra security people, that the people doing the work would, by and large, trade off the security duties.
Oh, so about the same number of people who actually were operationally active in 9/11. So it's not a huge team, but a far more skilled team than pulled off 9/11.
Yeah, we thought of that as an existence proof that you could get 20 people together and do it in secret. But we really didn't shoot for a number on the order of 20.
Okay. Could you buy all the tools and equipment you needed over the Internet or just from normal supply?
Jane? You bet you can. There was nothing we thought you needed, including an Army surplus small artillery piece to fire the subcritical masses that we couldn't buy right off the bat on the Internet. No, I won't tell you where we got it from.
Thank you.
We've kept that quiet.
Well, and I think probably there's a lot of people out there who don't really understand that the Hiroshima bomb was built inside just a Navy gun barrel, right? There was just nothing exotic about it.
Well, there was nothing exotic, and what there was exotic remains 60 years later classified, so we can't talk about it.
Okay. But it was basically taking two pieces of highly enriched uranium, slamming together at high speed, and having
boom.
A fissionable event. So the tools and equipment are easily obtained. Well, how much money would you need for a project like this, would you estimate?
Well, people argue about that all the time. Jeffrey and I costed out the hardware you had to buy, the salaries and miscellaneous, and we came to about $1 million or maybe $1.5 million for the actual operating costs. Now, that didn't include getting the fissile material.
Mm-hmm.
The fissile material, we thought for $10 million you could bribe somebody somewhere to deliver you the necessary roughly 50 kilograms of the stuff.
Okay, so get, say, a couple million dollars, 20 to 25 people with some good skills, but those are not uncommon skills out there when you look across the world at the population you could pull from to get these people, the tools and equipment that we could obtain. Now we have everything we need to make this improvised nuclear device except the highly enriched uranium.
That's right, and the highly enriched uranium is sometimes called fairy dust because without it you don't have a bomb, and with it you can. And it's, of course, very carefully guarded material most of the time in most places. It's certainly very expensive to buy.
Yeah, but it's out there is one of the concerns that people have. I know Charles Ferguson from the Council of Foreign Relations recently wrote that there's, at a minimum, there's 1,650 pounds of highly enriched uranium sitting in research reactors around the world that's really not very well guarded. 1,650 pounds. Now, how many pounds does it take to make an improvised nuclear device?
I really can't tell you. I can tell you that it's on the order of 50 kilograms, which is 110 pounds.
Yeah, okay. and that's not very large. Someone has told me that that's about the size of a gallon milk jug.
Oh, I don't think I've ever calculated it out that way, but that wouldn't be very far off.
It's not a lot of material, but that's the fairy dust. That's what makes this a real weapon. It's not that difficult to build all you need to design it and put the weapon together, except that highly enriched uranium. So that's what's so important about what President Obama's been doing, and then what we've been doing for a long time in a lot of administrations about locating, locking down, and eliminating the loose nuclear material around the world. The problem is there's still a lot of it out there, and as you've been teaching me for years, we don't know how much is out there.
We don't, because we're not sure how much the Soviet Union made. We're certainly not sure how much the Pakistanis and Indians have made. I suppose we know how much we made, and the British and French presumably know what they made. I won't speak for the Chinese or the Israelis. That means that even if you think you have locked up everything, you really don't know. You really don't know, because you don't know how much was made to begin with.
So that's why programs like Cooperative Threat Reduction, Proliferation Security Initiative, these are incredibly valuable investments in American national security. It's not a lot of money, but the return on investment is extraordinary. Dr. Peter Zimmerman, former chief scientist, Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and former professor and chair of science and security at the Department of War Studies in King's College, London, and a regular guest here on Science and National Security. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Randy.